Hello, folks. Welcome to the show. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, longtime friend of the Agile Contact Center, longtime friend of mine, and has been very, very gracious in his support of me and the Agile Contact Center since we reinvigorated the brand a few years ago. And it's none other than James Whitcomb, the director from Smart Recruitment. Welcome, James.
G'day, Sean. Great to be here and looking forward to having a discussion about how things are going in this crazy contact center world at the moment.
It is crazy, very crazy. I'm very excited to have you here. I suppose there's no better time to talk about recruitment. It's such a massive part of contact centers, but the environment at the moment is so unique. And I know you've got loads of really interesting insights and experience that you can share with our listeners. So really, really keen to get into that. But also I would love to hear a bit more about your leadership journey in the industry as well, because I know you've been around for 15 years now with Smart, and you guys specialize with contact centers. So yeah, I'd love to kind of let you go back and take us on a meandering journey of your your career thus far. And then we can dive into what I know a lot of people will be interested in, which is the labor market and recruitment. So let's do that. But before we start, I'm always after some music inspiration. So, what are you listening to at the moment? What gets your juices flowing?
It depends on the time of the day. So when I'm actually working, I love to listen to piano jazz. And sometimes when I'm back in the office in Melbourne, I'll get in first and, I'll put the Spotify onto piano jazz. And so people will often know that I'm in the office when they first walk in, because we'll get a couple of hours of piano jazz in. But I find that really almost a bit like white noise after a while. Mm. And I love to have that on in the background. So, and Spotify is great for that. So I like to listen to a bit of piano jazz when I'm working. I also like to listen to, I'm reaching for my phone as we're talking. I've got four kids, so I do a lot of the kids' music, but trying to get them to change some of what they're listening to from time to time is pretty hard. I'm obsessed with the Elton John Cold Heart remix at the moment. I think that's my most listened to song for the year. But I'm fairly mixed with my musical tastes. I actually probably go through phases of different brands. I'm probably still fairly tied to my late teens. those important years where I was listening to a lot of like Powderfinger. A lot of Silverchair. And you know, it's like just occasionally, I haven't heard that album for a while, and so you listen to it every day for a week, and then it probably goes away again for a year. I certainly do enjoy several different types of music.
Some interesting insights into your taste there. I must have grown up in the same sort of vintage as you, because that's all that stuff's on high rotation for me. All the Aussie stuff, Silverchair, Powderfinger. I grew up in WA, so when I was growing up, I was pretty spoiled. There was lots of
big Eskimo Joe.
Yeah. I will claim to know the. He started out as the drummer, Joel Quatermain. I know Joel, but I'm not going to claim to be his best mate or anything. Although Joel, if you're listening, which you're probably not. Let's catch up for a beer. But they used to live across the road from my mum, and so occasionally when I'd visit home and be walking around the streets of Frio, you'd see them walking around. Eskimo Joe was big, Jebediah, another big one, Sleepy Jackson, all those guys, Little Birdie. So yeah, that's very interesting. Have you listened to the Elton John revamp album? That's full of covers.
No, I haven't.
You'll love it. There's some really interesting artists on there that are very, very varied. You've got Florence and the Machine, Ed Sheeran, Mumford and Sons, The Killers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some really, really good retakes on some of his big stuff. So there you go.
Oh, good.
Well, it wasn't a musical podcast when we started, but maybe we could become a musical podcast. My dream come true. All right. Well, over to you, James. Talk us through your journey in the contact center world.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a country boy. Grew up in Mildura, and finished high school in the year of 2000. So, like a lot of people in Mildura, the end of high school really means one of three things. You either go to Adelaide for university, which was probably where most people went. You stayed locally for study or apprenticeship, or you came to Melbourne. And for me, I was very keen from the age of a little boy to come to Melbourne, just because we'd come here a couple of times a year for family and to go to the footy. So I was really excited to come to Melbourne. However, that being said, my very first preference for university was journalism in Adelaide, but I didn't get accepted. So if I had have got accepted into that, you know, it would have been a very different career for me. I think I would have been a journalist and probably wanted to go into sports journalism. Mm-hmm. That was the passion. But I really enjoyed writing. I think from memory, I got the Year 12 Literature Award in high school. That's been a skill. I think that's been very helpful all throughout my career.
Yeah.
Then headed to Melbourne and started at Monash Uni. And I was it was basically a marketing degree, but it was a Bachelor of Business specializing in retail, but really looking at marketing. And towards the final year of that degree, as I was coming, towards the end of graduating, I really felt that as interesting as the marketing components were, it was more the human side of things that I was interested in. And I was particularly interested in, motivation and what makes people work hard. And I worked at the Athlete's Foot throughout university for about 4 years, and we always had sales targets. And I really noticed how different I felt in terms of my level of motivation to work hard at work, based around targets and how I was performing. But also had some summer jobs as well, where I worked in a factory in Mildura, and had a boss whose personality was very up and down. And I noticed myself, if he was getting stuck into you, you just really didn't feel like going that extra mile, whereas if he was treating you well, you did. So a lot of that played on my mind. And so I then went through a little bit of a process with Monash, but got kind of special consideration to do the final year of the HR degree after my retail degree, and ended up with 2 degrees. But there I sort of learned that, I was far more interested in HR, and within HR, interested in recruitment. So I started my career, probably like a lot of graduates, you just go out and you apply for, anything you could, and you go through lots of interview processes. And I still remember I had my heart set on a job with PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC. And I went through, and this was my very first recruitment process as a graduate, and went through 2 or 3 rounds. And then this is in 2005, actually got a letter in the mail, to say that I was unsuccessful. And that was a really big sucker punch for me. It was the first time I probably really wanted something and not got it almost in my life. I'd, successful at high school. I was school captain, had a great time at uni. And then I got my heart set on this job. Had plenty of other applications in there, but got my heart set on this job and couldn't really work out why I didn't get it, but I knew it was a super competitive process. So I kept going, was offered a job with ANZ, and at the same time, was offered a job with Hayes, and the jobs were very different. ANZ, it was a graduate program, which is quite broad. Hayes was purely to do recruitment, and I was really unsure which to take, but chose the Hayes one. The funny thing is with Hayes, and we compete with Hayes, and I've got a lot of respect for them, you recruit, you know, in one particular industry. So the industry that I was given was accounting. Now Hayes weren't to know, but I failed. I failed two subjects in my first year at uni, first semester, first year. The main reason I failed was due to my own, you know, first time living away from home. Met a bunch of country kids. I was living on college on campus. You know, there were a lot of late nights, and all of a sudden we're in week eight and I was a long way behind. But I failed accounting, and the second time I only just passed it. Lo and behold, 3 years later, my first job was to recruit accountants. And my stint at Hayes wasn't very long. I only worked there for about, I resigned on the last day of my probation. I felt I was probably not well enough equipped to handle just their style of work. I was good at recruitment. I made lots of placements, but probably the competitive business development focus that was required, the ability to literally cold call partners at companies like KPMG and ask them to use our recruitment services, I just felt like my grounding wasn't there yet.
Mm.
But I learned a huge amount in those 4 months. They had wonderful training. But what I also learned was I didn't want to recruit accountants because accounting is a very technical skill. And literally the candidate turning up to interview was a little bit meaningless because we could see on their resume that they had the degree, that they had their CPA or their CA qualification. We could see what type of accounting they were doing. And so kind of as long as they turned up for the interview and they had their pants on the right way, that they were either going to go to the next stage or not. Like the interview was kind of, I felt it was really meaningless. You were either going to go through to the final round or not based on your resume, because that had all the information. So when I left there, I wanted to find a job where, you know, the actual interview performance meant something. And my journey into Smart was a little bit bizarre. It was towards the end of the year in 2005, and I needed a bit of time off after Hayes, and so I just sort of applied for a couple of jobs, and then I saw this job advertised working a 3-month contract, a recruiter needed for a 3-month contract, and it was advertised by Smart Recruitment. So I applied for the job. And one of the partners or founding partners, Stuart Holmes, who left Smart after 10 years but did an incredible job in setting us up, called me and brought me in for an interview. And he said, look, this job is with a call center in Richmond called Stella Call Centers. And they've got a lot of work coming up, and it's high volume recruitment. And I thought, this sounds fantastic. You know, I'd love to stick my teeth into this. Anyway, Stuart called me back a couple of days later and said, look, I'm really sorry. I put your best argument forward, but you know, with only sort of 4 months' experience, I've gone for someone with a little bit more experience. He said, "But why don't you come back in and have a chat? Because we've just started up Smart. Smart's only 6 months old, and we've kind of got a similar role here. We've got a couple of call center clients that we continually recruit for." So I went back in and I literally started at Smart as a casual. So it was the two founders, Martin Rosenberg, who is the founder and managing director now, and Stuart Holmes, who left after about 10 years. And I was working sort of about 30 hours a week for the first 3 months. I was on $20 an hour, and we had one particular call center client who are no longer around. And my role was literally high volume recruitment day after day. And I worked almost solely for this one call center for the first 6 months. And we would try to get 10 people starting there every Monday. And in terms of a grounding into recruitment, that was absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Just repeating kind of the same task, but trying to refine it, you know, by 1 or 2% every week. And we were recruiting outbound cold callers. So your skills as a recruiter will really need to be finely honed into, you know, picking whether this person was going to cut it in an outbound cold calling role. Because if they weren't going to cut it, they were literally going to get cut after one shift. And we would have put forward someone That kind of would have been a waste of time for the call center, for the employee, and for us. So that was really fun. I really enjoyed that because it was in many ways the opposite of recruiting accountants. If you performed well in the interview room, you could have done anything prior or nothing prior. Mm. And it was all about the interview performance. Mm. So we would run group assessments every single day. Every single day of the week, we'd run a group assessment. We'd try and get 7 or 8 people in. And a group assessment, you know, the theater of it, I really enjoyed, you know, hosting a group assessment. You know, my role as the host and the interviewer was really to do 3 things. One, it was to make people feel relaxed and open up. 2, it was to really sell the job. But 3, and most importantly, it was to assess if they were suitable. So you needed to do all those 3 things all the time. And I quickly learned as well that people fed off my own energy. So if I was really flat as the host and opened up and did a poor introduction, that set the tone. Whereas if I was really upbeat, that would set the tone and everyone would be upbeat and honest. And so that was a really good grounding for me. And we would have, as you can imagine, recruiting, you know, in high volume for outbound telesales. You know, there were continually things that would surprise us around, you know, the types of people we were meeting. And back then we would put up an advertisement on a weekend and we'd get 200 or 300 applications. So I would literally get into work on a Monday and Monday it was the only day of the week I wouldn't do an assessment. I would spend the whole day on the phone just booking in interviews and trying to work out whether people were right. So that was absolutely, it was a great time. And in some ways, when I look at my colleagues now, I wish that they could almost start their career just focusing on recruiting the same role for 6 months because it is a great way to really learn the ropes and to get to understand specifically what it takes for a sales role, which I think is pretty much the hardest role to recruit because you've got to assess so many things for a candidate. But that was a great learning. And then as Smart grew over the next couple of years, we started to work with more call centers. You know, I remember the great excitement I had. I probably didn't work on a customer service role for 2 or 3 years just because we were a new brand. We had a lot of competitors that people knew. So we kind of just had to pick up the work that was the hardest to fill, which was cold calling, telesales, appointment setting. So I still remember when we were working with Crazy John's and we did our first customer service intake. And I was like, wow, you know, finally we get to work on customer service roles where I feel I didn't necessarily have to try to convince the candidate so much. So so my journey from there, where we started to work with more and more contact centers. And then I started to develop a little bit of a team under myself at Smart. And then in 2010, so started Smart in 2005, you know, and to give you an example of how different it was, there was no LinkedIn in 2005.
Wow.
Facebook only started in 2000. Well, Facebook was founded in 2004, but
jeez,
wasn't being used in 2005 by us. So it was all literally job board applications and that was it. But in 2010, my wife completed her PhD and we went and traveled for 6 months. So we went and lived as volunteers in an orphanage in Ghana and for a month. And then we traveled for the other 4 or 5 months around Africa and Europe.
Wow. Wow.
And at that stage, I'd been at Smart for 5 years. And so I left Smart, but we, you know, I left the door open to coming back and Smart left the door open to coming back to me. And I just said to Marty and Stuart at the time, look, guys, I'm not saying I'm not coming back, but I just don't know. You know, I'm going off to have a once in a lifetime experience of traveling for 6 months. Who knows, maybe we'll land somewhere overseas and not want to come back. But, you know, came back. And one of the things I've enjoyed the most about Smart in particular from Marty was his backing for me to, and for all of our staff to give anything a crack, give it a crack. And at this stage, Smart only had one office. And I've got an entrepreneurial desire or drive. So I came back and said, I want to open a second office for Smart. I want to open an office. We've only got one. I want to open one myself, run it myself. And I want to feel like I can build something from scratch. So We did that very late 2010. We opened our Mount Waverley branch in a little serviced office on the corner of Blackburn and High Street Road. And then after 3 months, we then moved down to a Pinewood Shopping Centre on Blackwood Road.
I know that well.
Yeah.
I know that well. I used to go to a dentist there.
No, did you? Okay. ran an office there for about 3 years and grew the team from just myself up to five. But, I deliberately wanted to start again. So I didn't ask the business for any clients. I literally wanted to go out and say, hey, can I really go out there and build an office or build a business within a business from scratch? And it was a lot of hard work. Again, we'd only been around for 5 years, so we still had to win a lot on price. So we still, there's always a position in the market for the cheapest player. That was me when we started out the Mount Waverley branch. So, but that was great fun. That was really great fun. Some of the people that I brought in to join the business then, like Anastasia Sedaris, are still with Smart. So 3 or 4 years of doing that. Over that time, we then opened another branch in Cheltenham. And after about 12 to 18 months, we thought we've got three Melbourne offices. I'd been enjoying managing the branch, but I kind of felt like, after 4 or so years, I'd proved to myself that I could build it. I'd done it. We've got a team of 4 or 5. So we then merged the Cheltenham branch, which was about 3 staff, the Mount Waverley branch, which was 4 or 5, into one branch in Oakleigh. And I then moved to a position as director and in many ways ceased having direct recruiters reporting into me. And my role at Smart started to change. And it was around that time that we lost a couple of larger call center clients, kind of through no fault of our own, but sometimes in recruitment, there'll be a new directive from above to we've got to bring all recruitment in-house. We're going to completely cut our agency spend. And this happened recently, one of our larger clients, they had a directive from above that instead of using specialist agencies, because they were using about 40 specialist agencies, they reduced their panel of agencies down to 4. And you needed to be able to have a presence in every city, which we don't. So we lost out there. So things can move against you. And so we had 1 6-month period where we lost about 3 call center clients. And that's really significant because some of our clients, repeat business, regular work, some of our staff at the moment solely just focus on one client, or we'll have multiple staff on one client. Losing one client is huge. And we kind of sat back a little bit and, had some frank discussions at the leadership level and said, look, we've been around for, 12 or so years now. We are known, but, are we just kind of becoming the same as everybody else? It's very competitive. There's literally 3 or 4 or 5,000 recruiters in Australia, recruitment companies. We've got dozens of competitors in the call center space. Let's not kid ourselves here. We don't have a great point of difference. So I'd been working with a mentor at that time, and he had a really powerful impact on me and talked about the importance of being famous for something, being famous for something as an individual and being famous for something as a recruitment agency, and that can be a really big point of difference. And so, what we came up with was really a 2-pronged strategy, which has been really successful. But the aim was, that we wanted to position ourselves as being able to be kind of the thought leader. We wanted to be the thought leader for call centers. So when we were speaking to our clients or to our prospective clients, it wasn't just about we will go out and we will send you resumes. It's, we know the market better than anybody else. We can talk to you about what's going on. And actually, we're the source of information. So we wanted people to come to us. But we knew it was a long journey. We knew it certainly wouldn't happen overnight. So the two things that we we did, which have been successful, was first of all, introduced a mentoring program. And Sean, you've been very generous as a part of that. But we thought, you know, a mentoring program, and I'm really passionate on the power of mentoring because I had such a great experience that had a big impact on me. We thought let's put together a mentoring program for team leaders in particular who want to drive their career forward in the industry. And so the first year we ran the mentoring program was just in Melbourne. I think we had 12 to 14 couples, and we partnered team leaders from across the industry with call center managers from across the industry as well. So, for example, a team leader at the Commonwealth Bank was being mentored by a call center manager or a senior person from another call center that wasn't a competitor. So it might have been Origin Energy, for example. And that program worked really well in the first year. And so in the second year, we really ramped things up and to the point where we've run it for 4 years now. And this year we had 60 pairs. And I spent a lot of time with the organization that delivered the mentor induction and ran the program and asked them to train me up. And I deliver that program. So that's really helped Smart in a lot of ways, because first of all, we run it for free. So it's a really good give back to the industry. But it has a real impact as well. So I've got an email folder just full of emails from people who've been involved in the program saying, you know, that it had a really big impact on them. And so that's been really touching, but it's also helped from a business point of view, you know, for me to develop some really good relationships with industry leaders. It's really helped as well to position our brand well. And, you know, this is the first year, 2022, that we haven't started the program in the first quarter of the year. We will be doing so in the second half of the year, if you're listening. So we just wanted to, after running the program for 2 years through COVID, I just wanted to give ourselves the best opportunity to allow the mentors and mentees to maximize face time. Mm-hmm. Because part of what we also do is we want participants in the program to create networks amongst themselves. So we want the mentees, the team leaders that are coming along, because we run three or four group sessions together. Last year, they were pretty much all on. Well, the last 2 years, they've been all online. And so we thought, let's just pause it for 6 months. We'll run it again in the second half of the year. And let's hope that we can do so in a way where we can increase the likelihood of people meeting face-to-face. So that was one of our strategies. And then the second strategy was the creation of the contact center best practice report. And the idea from it really came, and I've spoken about this a couple of times, it occurred in 1 week where I received three or four calls from call center managers who were wanting basically to benchmark something in their contact center. So I clearly remember one call from a leader who said to me, James, I'm really frustrated because, you know, we're a financial institution. We spend a lot of time recruiting. We spend a lot of time onboarding. We spend a lot of time training. Our speed to competency is about 6 months, but other areas of the business are just coming and picking out the staff. They're picking out the staff who aren't even getting to 6 months because they know they've had really good training and they understand our customer and all those types of things. What do other organizations do? What is normal? What's benchmark? I thought, what a great question, but I don't know the answer. I also remember another call center that was restructuring at the time, very large call center, 300 or 400 employees. And they were debating internally about what their team size should be. And there was financially pressure to increase. I think they were at about 15 or 16. They weren't slightly probably larger than average. There was financially pressure to increase the team size headcount to 22 to 24.
Wow.
Whereas this particular call center manager was saying, we actually need to go the other way. I want to drop it down to around 10. Mm. So complete opposite ends of the spectrum. And this leader was saying, I really need some data around average team sizes. And in particular, I'd love to see some examples of call centers that have got smaller team sizes. You know, where can I get this data? And again, I was like, wow, that's a great question. I went away and had a look, couldn't find anything. So we kind of thought, well, and had a couple of other calls around the same time. I thought, well, if people are asking for this data, there's clearly a need and we can't find the data. So what if we actually become the source of this information? We can provide this information and people will come to us. So the first report, which we released in 2019, I was very proud of it at the time. I'm probably a little bit embarrassed of it now.
How come?
Well, just actually, I've got it sitting here. Just given how much better the following two reports are. So in many ways, the first report was a test and learn. It was a short report. And we didn't necessarily make mistakes in the questioning, but we learned a lot from doing that first report. We learned a lot. We learned, first of all, that it was highly sought after. So the desire for this information was red hot. And we learned how to write a report, write a survey, put it all together. And basically, we proved the concept to ourselves, I guess. So when we did our second report and it was slightly interrupted by COVID, we learned that, hey, we can actually put some real resources, I guess, behind this. We can put some money behind making it a really professional report because we know that the interest is there. So our second report, we spent a lot more time. So I spoke to a lot of leaders before we designed the market research component of the survey to say, what's important to you? You know, we can go out there and ask these questions, but what's important to you? What would you like to know? And so we literally ended up with 600 questions. So we ended up with 600 questions from about 15 different leaders that we kind of call our focus group. We went through those questions. We found common themes and threads, and we put the survey together. And what we do with our report each year is it will never be an identical report because we want to focus on the topics that are important. So with this year's report, for example, we've added, workforce planning and optimization because there's been such a focus. We've added an AI chapter. Next year already we will add a knowledge management chapter to the next round of reports. So we want to go to, what are the hot topics? What's important to you at the moment? So our second report we released, we had to release it during COVID. We really wanted to release it and have in-person events like we did in 2022. But we ran three 90-minute presentations, and we had you a part of them, Sean, the Agile Contact Center, which was great. And each of those three presentations, we had an audience of over 100 online. So that was fantastic. And it was a bit clunky during COVID because we had to post out copies. So I think we posted out 700 or 800 copies. The expense was pretty high because they cost about $6 to post each. So we're up to, $5,000 or $6,000 in postage. But again, the interest was really there. And so for us, it's really repositioned our brand. We feel as the leading, we want to be the leading supplier of call center staff. We also feel now that, we've probably got the strongest reputation for market knowledge. And then we come to this year's report, which we released, over the last 6 to 8 weeks, and just the depth of the report. So our second report was 100 pages. This one's close to 240. We've really learned, I guess, a lot around how to write a good report, collate the data, present it in a really good way. And because it's our third time around now, the reputation of the report, the audience grows, people understand and probably respect the report, so they're more likely to contribute. Because it is a big trust thing when you complete an online survey and some of the we ask questions around staff turnover and your own personal salary, and if people don't feel comfortable, they won't give you that information. So doing the report for the third time has certainly allowed us to probably, it's never easy getting people to respond, but it's easier in the third year than the fourth. But went swimmingly well this year and running four events, which were all really well attended, was really good. And I think there's just great desire for industry benchmarking at the moment, particularly because, not just because of COVID, but things are just changing so quickly. Things are moving so quickly. And to that point, at the end of this month, we are going to do another, we're going to do a 5 to 6 question survey. So we're going to send out again a 5 to 6 question survey, because there's some things happening in the market at the moment. And I think attrition is one of them, where I think things have changed a lot in the last 3 months. And so we don't want to wait 12 months to bring out the next report for some of these things, which are moving really quickly. So I think we'll continue to do our annual report, but I think we'll do a lot of, we could call it a pulse check or one of those types of things. But yeah, speaking to some contacts that I managed in the last couple of weeks, they're kind of like, what's been happening this year, you know, or what's been happening just in the last 3 months? There's so much instability that, as good as our report is, it's a snapshot in time from November last year, and it's got some great data there. And most of those things haven't moved very far, but some of those things have started moving quite quickly again.
I think we can get into what's happening in the labour market maybe now as well, but I think you're right. That's the feeling, is that things have really hotted up in terms of competition.
Yeah.
Before we dive into that a bit more, I wouldn't mind just circling back on a couple of things you said, because that was a really fascinating journey that you talked about. There's a couple of things that I really like there, resonate with me in how you've grown the business, or you've grown with the business in your own, the way you've thought about how you want to, build smart as a brand. And I like although you said you're maybe embarrassed by the first version, I don't think we get the version that we've got this year without that first one, that ability to iterate and learn. I think there's a really good lesson for people there, that you kind of do just sometimes have to get something out there to test the value of it. And you might not love it, as much as you would like, but you don't get any more value on, pondering over it even more, pontificating about what it might need. Once you get it out there, your customers will tell you what's good. And that certainly resonated really, really well for me. The other thing too, about where you talked about your smarts brand and how you differentiate that, how you've thought about differentiating that in the market, because you're right, particularly with contact centers and volume recruiting. And this has been my experience with recruiting within a contact center, is that, sometimes it's hard to find that point of difference with a recruiter to say, well, why would I pick you versus someone else if we're just trying to fill a whole heap of roles and you're all going out to the same market? What's that point of difference? So I love the way you guys are thinking about that, because you've got so much, you're so connected to what's happening in the industry. It makes perfect sense that you could become that sort of trusted partner for contact centers to be able to provide that those insights and that information through the best practice report. And it's been something that has been sadly missing for so long.
Yeah.
So it's that's brilliant. I wondered whether with obviously all of your contact with contact centers, how should contact centers be thinking about differentiating themselves? And maybe this is a segue into talking about, some of the stuff that's happening in the market right now, but how do contact centers differentiate themselves? Because to a large degree, a contact center is a contact center. Obviously, they're all uniquely different, but from the outside looking in, if I was applying for roles and I'm throwing out half a dozen applications, and then what are the key things that contact centers should be trying to differentiate on so that they become, the contact center of choice?
Yeah. It's a really good question. We've actually, due to COVID, everything has gone online in terms of interviews. And my own view is that is probably not going to change a lot now. I think recruiters have certainly learned that interviewing online is a massive time saver. Because if you've got a 10 o'clock appointment, you just log on at 10 o'clock. And in some ways, I think, and maybe this is not the best outcome, but I think it's also meant interviews and assessments have become a bit shorter. It's a little bit more transactional. But overall, it probably allows recruiters to be more effective. It also means time scheduling and those things are easier for both the candidate and the recruiter. So, you know, we've gone from probably 5% Zoom type interviews to 100% Zoom interviews during COVID. I think we'll settle back down at probably the high 80s or above. Mm. However, we've been recruiting for one very large call center recently, who we've had some challenges attracting people, you know, not necessarily to apply for or to come to interview, but we've really struggled to secure them after they've been offered a job. So we can see what's happening. We've offered them a job with our client. They've probably been offered three other jobs, and more often than not, they've not been choosing the job for our client. So we thought, let's try something different. Let's change it from Zoom. Let's get it back in-house. Let's do in-person around the boardroom table group assessments. And we said to our client, we want you to come along. We want you to come along and you can talk about the story. So instead of us as a third party, you can come along and the candidates can see you face-to-face and hear your story. And we've been doing that for about 4 weeks now, and it has dramatically changed the number of candidates that are accepting the job. And so there's the real lesson in that is that job seekers want real information from a real person. And I think the best person to be involved in meeting with candidates is the line manager. And in call centers, this does not happen anywhere near enough.
Yeah.
And the simple question I'd say to every call center is, if you were going for a job, would you want to accept a job without meeting your manager first?
Mm.
Because that's what we are asking in most call centers.
Yeah.
Candidates do. We're saying, come and take this job, but you don't know who your team leader is going to be.
Yeah.
And again, from our report, Sean, we can show that agents feel more connected to their team leaders than they do to the organization. And some call centers will go, well, but we put them in 4 weeks training and we don't know who their team leader is going to be at that point in time. You know, I completely understand that. So, you know, at the least, get the trainer in there and say, hey, you're going to be with me for the first 4 weeks if you get the job. My name's Tony. This is what we're going to do. There's so much noise out there, and call centers really work hard on their employee value proposition. They've got a lot of great videos of staff smiling on the phone and, you know, playing table tennis. But everyone, so it just all blends into one.
Yeah.
It all blends into one. But I actually think it's hard for job seekers because due to a lot of online interviews now, you feel like you're probably actually getting less exposure.
Mm.
Like when we work with a lot of our clients pre-COVID, we say, we want to do the interviews on your location. We want to walk everyone through the call center. We want them to hear the noise. We want them to feel the vibe. We want them to smell the smell so that when they actually leave the interview, you know, they will probably remember that the most. So we've lost all of these things, but I think particularly in a really tough market, if you are recruiting for a particular location, I would really encourage you to get back to some of those basics because that's what's going to stick in the candidate's memory. At the least, if you're not having the direct manager or leader of the person meet them throughout the recruitment process, then I think you're really not doing well enough.
Yeah, I agree. I've never understood that. I mean, I do understand why there's, you know, constraints around many things. Like what you called out, but yeah, it comes back to connection. People feeling like, I mean, every time I've interviewed someone for a role, I've wanted to be in front of them because I want to feel like, can I connect with this person? Do I like them? We're going to get along. But there's some intangible stuff there that you want to be able to feel. And I think with a contact center should work really hard to try and overcome that barrier because I think it will, as you've said, it does make a tangible difference.
Yeah, it does, and I get it though. Team leaders, they are so time poor. They're the most time poor person in the contact center. So if they've got two or three vacancies and they probably should be interviewing three people per vacancy, you know, that's 6 to 8 interviews, that's 6 to 8 hours. They just don't have the time.
Yeah.
But making a bad hire or making no hire at all is more costly.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. That's fascinating. I'm glad you called out. That's something that's been playing on my mind recently as well with a client that I'm working with. So that's really, really good. Talk to us a bit about what's going on in the market at the moment, James. Mm. We've been sort of dancing around it a little bit. Let's dive into that.
Well, I wrote an article called "The Toughest Contact Center Recruitment Market We've Ever Seen" in March last year. So March 2021, and that's what I called it, March 2021, the toughest contact center recruitment market we've seen. And that was 13 months ago now. Mm. And what has happened in the 13 months since is that in a linear fashion, it has got harder every single month. So let me throw some stats at you because I love stats. So unemployment is around 4%. Just don't ask the leader of the opposition. You won't be sure. So unemployment is 4%. SEEK came out with a report this week around some of the following. So they've done an analysis on some salaries and information from and compared November to February 2 years ago with November to February now. So November to February 2019, November 19 to February 20, with November 21 to February this year. So they've got a three-year period, 2 years apart. What they found is that since the border closed, well, the Australian Bureau of Statistics have reports there are an extra 170,000 job vacancies at the moment compared to that period of time. And unemployment being 4% is the lowest since around 2008. And it's slightly lower than 2008 now. And before that, you have to go back to the 70s.
Wow.
So unemployment's effectively at a 50-year low. But what SEEK are also doing is saying, you know, there's all, as well as jobs have gone up, there's far fewer candidates available than around the same time. So fewer unemployed workers per job advertisement than we've ever seen in the history of our company. And contact center is not completely at the pointy end, but it is probably one of the top industries that's been impacted. And people say why has it just gone from, you know, the middle of COVID where, you know, we would get 600 applications for a job to the same job today, we'll be lucky to get 20. And it's not any one factor. I think there's a big misconception around the general economy around how much Australia relies on skilled migration and also students. I think the stat was Melbourne had 15,000 uni students arrive in February this year. Now, students and travellers and skilled migrants are all great sources of candidates for the contact centre industry. So we particularly find it smart that for short-term, for casual, for temp or for contract work, working holiday visa candidates who are often from the UK are the best candidates. They've come to Australia to work hard and travel, a call centre role in a comfortable air-conditioned environment with, you know, a guaranteed award rate at a minimum is going to be good pay. They've had a couple of jobs before. They're often degree qualified. They are a better quality of candidate often than an Australian who is going for the same job. So we lost that whole market during COVID. And at Smart Recruitment, that made up around 30 to 40% of our temps. And that dropped down to about 1% or 2%.
Wow.
That will slowly come back, and it has started to. But, you know, that's a question that I can't answer is when are we going to return to the same level of international travel? We're also finding call centers really struggling now with deciding what their work from home policy is. Because I think many organizations have still, despite the fact that I think the last 2 years have proved the effectiveness of it, still aren't sure what they want to do with that in a COVID-free world. And candidates are telling us clearly, and they're telling us very loudly, that they want to work from home. And they're asking us in the interview process, and they're asking the clients as well, what is your policy? And if it doesn't sound favorable, then they're just moving on. They're just saying, I'll just move on to the next best thing because you're not offering me the level of flexibility.
Yeah.
But application volumes are just extremely low. They are so low at the moment that that's the most common conversation I'm having with organizations. Is why are they so low? But
yeah,
when unemployment is this low, regardless of any of the other challenges, I mean, even for us as a recruitment agency, we need unemployment to be low for people to need our services, but it is too low for us now.
Yeah, right.
It is just too low for us. And so I feel quite bad at times because, you know, a lot of people do come to us because we've got the information and the data. I feel like I'm the bearer of bad news at the moment to a lot of call centers. And those that work in the recruitment or the talent team at call centers, they get it. They understand what I'm talking about. Where it gets really hard is those line managers who just recruit maybe once every 6 to 12 months. And when they did recruit, you know, in the past, they were used to getting a really, you know, they got two vacancies. They'll get a really good short list of six candidates. They can take their time. Now it's, we'll send you one person if we can find them, and you've got to move quickly. LinkedIn did a post a couple of weeks ago. Now this data is based on job postings in the US for February. So it's a little bit different, but remote jobs. So remote jobs posted on LinkedIn made up less than 20% of the job ad posting. So less than one in five jobs on LinkedIn were for remote work, yet they received more than 50% of all applications.
Wow.
So people, I get, there are more applications coming for those less than 20% jobs.
Yeah, wow.
Remote working.
Yeah.
So to me, it is just like, how long, if you are not providing flexible remote working options, you are falling behind, and you need to have an awakening.
Yeah.
You need to have an awakening. But we are working with call centers at the moment who are 100% back in the contact center. Mm. They feel they get better results. But I just wonder how long it's going.
That's a very, it's a really interesting one. It always comes back to in the conversations I have around results. And I'm keen to understand more about what results they are. Are they productivity based measures? Are they the kind of results where you feel like you've got more control over the workforce, or are they generally the right outcomes from a people and a customer perspective? I was having a chat yesterday to a couple of leaders, and I think these guys have got it right. They were talking about their work from home situation with their two teams, and they couldn't be more different. Same organization, same site, but couldn't be more different. One of them said, look, I've got some of my team in the office, some at home. Someone was working at home, and they said, look, I'm just really struggling. Like, I've got kids and a family here, and I just would really love to come back into the office. She said, no problem. I've got your back. Come on in and you can work from home. Cool. And then the other leader said, well, all my team really love working from home, so we're just doing it 100% remote. And I thought, that's brilliant. Like, that level of flexibility and the decision-making autonomy that those two leaders have got to just make a call on a case-by-case basis with their people on what was right for them. So I thought that was great, putting that priority of their people first. And I think it comes down to as well the leader too. So I think some leaders may find leading teams remotely works better for them. I think they might have found the kind of niche that works right for them, and others, you know, maybe hybrid or some 100% remote. But I think that's okay to a point. But at some point, as a leader, you've got to adapt to what's happening around you. And if, like you're saying, if those, I'd say those stats probably ring true in Australia. If you've got 50% of people looking for remote jobs, for 20% of the jobs, I mean, you've got to, as a leader, go, how do I make sure I can lead effectively from anywhere so that I just take that off the table? That's not a variable I need to worry about anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, the you can jump on Seek today. I had a look this morning before coming on. in terms of the volume of ads. So Seek Created, on there you can search via location, but they've also put a work from home category. So to put it in perspective, if you click on the call center category, there's 1,200 jobs in Melbourne at the moment. If you click on the work from home category, there was close to 700. So in terms of the jobs in the most locations in Australia, at the moment it goes Sydney, Melbourne, work from home. So there's more jobs being advertised for call centres in work from home than there are in Brisbane or Adelaide or Perth or anywhere else. The worrying one for a lot of call centres is, I've got it in front of me now, if you just type in customer service into the free text box, so you don't choose an industry, you just type in customer service and you're looking for a work from home job for customer service around Australia, there's over 10,000. There's 10,000 jobs. And so if you're recruiting for a call center anywhere in Australia now, you're not just competing against those other localized call centers or localized jobs. You're competing with these 10,000 jobs. So if you are not accessing the candidates who are also looking for remote work, then you've just shrunk everything down. Or you can embrace it and go, okay, candidates want to work from home. They're applying for more remote working jobs. We need to be accessing that pool. And I know that means structurally for some contact centers, they really need to change the way they operate. But if you are really struggling to fill roles for your call center in Richmond, imagine if you could open up to having applications from all over Australia. And there'll be some road bumps in doing that. There'll be some teething problems. It won't be smooth sailing from the first intake. But
correct.
The call centres we've seen adapt to doing fully remote intakes are continuing to do it.
Yeah. Look, I think the lesson, I mean, just think about the first best practice report you put out and your reflections on that. If people are listening thinking, well, yeah, we are worried about, you know, remote working or having hybrid situations, but I'd say you've got to start somewhere. Like these fears or these risks that you think are material, and some of them will be, but I mean, I just don't think there's been any stronger imperative to try to work around and mitigate the risks that might be there for teams. And I think start small, start with one team, go 100% remote with it, test the technology out, find out where the gaps are in leadership and engagement and the experience, and build, start small, reduce the risks, scale it up from there. I think that the benefits are just enormous.
With our best practice report, so some of the contact centres that provided a large number of agents, we're giving them a customised report, and we are able to draw out their agent responses and compare it to the average. And for a couple of, so one of the great things from the report was we found that actually agents do have a very strong positive view about their long-term future in the call centre that they're working in. However, the contact centres that are reporting that agents reported a low level of flexibility have much lower levels of agents seeing a long-term future. We found a direct correlation there, which was, I'm surprised at how, one particular contact centre, engagement scores are pretty good. So there was nothing wrong with engagement, but yeah, flexibility offered was much lower than the average. And then their likelihood of being in the contact centre in 12 months' time was significantly lower in the average. People talk as well, and people in call centres know other people in call centres. And if agents are going, I might get one day from home, but it has to be on a Tuesday, and that kind of doesn't work for me. But, my friends in other contact centres, they can do 3 days a week from home, or they get some more flexibility. I don't think we necessarily need to move to everyone choosing 100% of the time where they are. I mean, we don't do that in our business, but we've still got a high level of flexibility.
Yeah,
and trust. I think I wouldn't necessarily want to work for a leader that needed everybody to be under his nose or her nose.
Yeah, agree. I think I advocate for that too. I think it should come back to choice rather than 100% remote or like a mandated X number of days. And I think when, even if you are getting people into the office, they need to understand why they're there. Like, why am I coming in here for this commute to do this work when my day here was exactly the same as what it was going to be when I was at home? Now, I don't understand why I'm here then. Am I here just because you've got a lease on this building and you're going to lose money if it's empty half the time? I think it really shines a lot on making those days in office purposeful. So what do I get extra out of coming in? How do we build connection? How do we leverage those, you know, those social networks that work is so important for? I think they're the things that leaders ought to focus on when they're getting people back into the office, so that people get up in the morning and go, I'm actually looking forward to doing this commute and going into work, because I know today is going to be a little different to what it is if I'm just working at home.
You've got to buy their commute now, don't you?
Yeah.
You've got to convince somebody on the commute.
Why? Absolutely.
What's going to make it worthwhile for you getting up and going in? Now, I think for a lot of people, if they are working from home most of the time, you know, one day a week, they're actually looking forward to going in.
Yeah.
Into the office. But I think from our best practice report, we show it's in the 70s. If agents could choose, they would want to work from home. I think it's 78% of the time. Only 4% of agents want to work from home, want to work from call center all the time. But again, you know, circumstances change. Mm. You know, some of my colleagues, we have a 3-2 policy. We'd like you to be in the office 2 days a week, and the other three days you choose. But some of my colleagues come in 5 days a week. One still lives with his parents, so that suits him. We won't name him on air. One's got, you know, a small baby at home and just finds, you know, it's a bit too hard to work and concentrate. But those things will change over time for both.
Yeah.
Hopefully my colleague in particular who lives with his parents will move out. But, you know, everybody's circumstances change. And so, you know, in some ways it is staggering that I feel what we learned as a society throughout COVID is people are trustworthy and don't sit at home and watch Netflix. They just don't. Mm. Like, apart from that 1%, and you're probably not losing anything out with that 1% that are doing it anyway. So this big fear or this big joke and the wink and the nudge about, hey, I'm working from home, it was just a big fat lie that people were not going to work from home. So it is really surprising for me to see that contact centers are trying to claw back some of the old school control. When even we ask contact center managers about output and performance, and the data suggests on average they're no worse off.
I think there's something in there about human behavior, and if you design your systems at work around that 1%, then everyone else goes down to that level. What you want is the opposite, where you want people to rise to the challenge and rise to the occasion and design it for the 99%, and the 1% stick out like a sore thumb. I think there's a lot in that.
From a best practice point of view and from a consulting point of view, now it's just so exciting. Like there's just so much happening, and people are trying different things. I think there's a lot of, like, if everything's the same and everyone's sure of what's going on, sort of from an industry and a consulting and a benchmarking perspective, it's a bit boring, you know? So, and that's the same from a recruitment point of view. Having been in recruitment for 17 years, these last 2 years have just been, like, they are unprecedented.
Mm.
Like, unemployment sort of 2012 till COVID hit was just sort of slowly declining down, then it'd bump up again, but it was kind of always in the same range. COVID hit, it went through the roof, most unemployed people ever.
Mm.
COVID sort of dissipated, and then it is just I use the example in our best practice presentations of a friend I've got at the AFL who works in corporate sales, and 2 years ago, a couple of months before COVID hit, and he advertised a sort of account management, business development role with the AFL. And I can't remember the exact number, but over one weekend, he had close to 300 applications. came in on the Monday and had, you know, 30 or 40 voicemails. He said, I had CFOs leaving me a voicemail saying, hey, I'm on $300,000, but to work for the AFL in corporate sales, I'll take $50,000. Like, he goes, I had to pull the ad down. He goes, it was ridiculous. Same job, 2 years later, same month in January, over the course of a month, he got 29 applications. So he went from around 300 in one weekend to less than one a day for the same.
That's bonkers.
And that is a premium. That's a premium brand. I mean, that's, you know, AFL are very highly regarded as a great employer. Yep. You know, top place to work, all those types of things. So, and then you hear a lot from your friends. It's like, oh, you recruiters, every single time I open up LinkedIn at the moment, I've got three messages from somebody, you know, wanting to talk to me about a job. But I enjoy it because, you know, recruitment and unemployment, particularly with an election coming up, is, yeah, it's a hot topic. And I feel that a lot of talent acquisition people as well are saying, hey, this is really our chance to get a, you know, get a seat at the table with the big boys and girls, and to really help show our value.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very exciting time. I think there's a few things that are converging together that has shone a really bright light on the contact center and the role that they play in organizations, which happened through COVID. And I think now, probably the first time in my experience with contact centers, the power, I suppose, for want of a better term, sitting with and around that role of the frontline employee in a contact center, has, they've never had more bargaining power than they do now, which is which I'm really excited about, because that's typically not been the case at all. And so I think, what that means for building great employee experiences is very exciting to me.
No, there's you know, there's great opportunity, I think, at the moment. And it's funny that, I mean, what, we've passed 2 years of COVID now, but it still feels like we're doing a lot of testing and learning. And I think a large part of what we need to do is, particularly with agents, but also with team leaders, is find ways to make, not necessarily make their roles easier, but make sure they're working on that value, the work that's valuable to them, and we're removing from their role the duties that, you know, are not as important but take up a lot of their time.
Yeah, I agree.
And maximising their skill set.
Yeah. James, I could keep talking to you for a long time. It's very, I do talk to you a lot, so it's been a good chat. It's very, very good free-flowing conversation, which has been great on a lot of very hot topics. But let's wrap things up. I mean, you have spoken about a few trends, but are there, over the next, you know, 5 years, where do you see things heading?
You know, it is a great question. If I knew, I'd probably be working towards it, you know, those types of things myself. But I think from a recruitment point of view, what I think is going to happen is I think there's going to be very much kind of like a two-speed economy. I think we're going to see a two-speed or two different speeds in terms of to the approachment of recruitment and talent acquisition within contact centers. And I think there'll be a bit of separation there. I think, you know, the leading organizations are going to, you know, really understand that some of the same old messages, if you get your recruitment right, everything becomes easier. You know, if you start by hiring great people in the right positions, everything becomes easier. To do that over the next 5 years, though, is probably going to be harder than ever. So Greg Savage, who's well known in the recruitment industry, particularly the agency industry, said, particularly with all the tools we've got, it's never been easier to find people, but it's also never been harder to recruit them. So through LinkedIn, you know, through some of the Seek products and databases, we can reach nearly anybody who's working in Australia. We can get in contact with them. But how do we actually seduce them as candidates, and how do we attract them? So I think organizations that do that really, really well are going to be leaps and bounds ahead of organizations that don't. My biggest fear is probably with organizations that, you know, they have relied on traditional methods of recruitment that have worked okay and they have got by, they are going to fall behind really, really quickly. I think from, you know, I think from a call center perspective, I think sort of a little bit of the next wave will be, you know, from a technology point of view, tools that can make the agent's life easier. I think agents have such a busy role that I think tools that can really assist them to be better at their job. So maybe it's, you know, different forms of automation, and we are seeing some interesting tools come in the market there. I think that's really important. I think there's no doubt that job fulfillment for agents, as it is for anyone, is really important. And it seems like in contact centers, there are so many factors that play into job fulfillment. I think we look, though, at the things that are on the surface, like the work environment, the relationship with the team leader. I think it's time to really start looking a little bit more at the work and the complexity of the work for some agents. And what can we do to actually make their job, you know, a little bit easier? For some call centers, that's simply, you know, diverting some traffic. But I think what tools can we have when the agent is on the phone in a conversation with the customer that is, you know, not necessarily straightforward, that can help them. And then I think for me, the third thing is, I think the fascination for contact centers is where do we end up with the role of the team leader? Like where we have, as you just said before, we've now got some team leaders managing 100% remotely, 50% of their staff are remote, or 100% in the call center. Very different, I think, skill sets required to manage 100% remotely versus 100% in the contact center. I would say a lot of team leaders hate managing remotely. So do we really then start to look at a separation of the role for the leader based on the location of who they're leading? I think we need to do that. I think we need to identify team leaders who are skilled at leading remote teams and team leaders who don't want to manage remote teams. They want to manage their teams within a contact center. We need to identify those leaders and make sure they're playing towards their strengths. Because if they're not playing towards their strengths, two things are happening. The organization's getting an underperforming team leader, and you've got a team leader who's not enjoying their job. And both of those things point towards underwhelming performance and an exit.
Organization.
So I think that'll happen a little bit more across the broader economy, though, I mentioned a couple of times in our best practice presentations, I think a new category in the workforce is going to be the remote working team. So organizations putting in teams, putting in leaders that will focus solely on how is our workforce operating remotely. And I think we're in the very early stages of that now, a bit like, you know, in the early stages 5 years ago of the CX leader. I think that there will be a wave, particularly with large organizations, of appointing people with responsibility for making sure the remote work is being done well. And I think for many roles, that will come with a little bit of a job redesign. But team leaders in particular, I think we need to look at who wants to manage remotely and who only wants to manage in contact centers.
Yeah. That's the other spotlight that I think has shone on on contact centers in the last, probably since we've now coming it more out of the lockdowns. We did that hard transfer of the technology standing up to get contact centers to better work from home. And now I think the leadership component is now a focus, because one of the beautiful things about contact centers is you become a leader with relatively no experience. And unfortunately, a lot of contact centers don't have the investment to be able to then build those leaders. So they just learn by making mistakes. They learn from role models. Maybe some of those role models aren't the greatest, but they kind of just learn as they go.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think that the investment now in the leadership capability to be able to, perhaps, like you said, differentiate between those leaders whose strengths are one or the other, but to build those adaptive leadership capabilities, I think is a huge thing, which is really important. And I like what you're saying about that focus on remote leadership, and maybe even taking that one step further, organizations actually having someone who is whose responsibility is for looking at just the way the organization is working broadly, just with the complexity that exists, I think that, yeah, there's definitely an opportunity for organizations to be a bit more purposeful about looking at the operating models, how people are working effectively together within the organization. And I know that some people might be listening thinking, oh, well, that's the role of HR people within that space, but they tend to be they tend to spend a lot of their time on the people yeah. related issues, not so much on the system that exists within the organization. So yeah.
I think there's been a lot of, you know, workshops and classes advertised over the last few years about, you know, how do you manage remotely because you normally don't, and how can we quickly tack on a few extra skills so that you can, you know, add remote working to your to the bows in your is it bows in your quiver? No, quivers in your bow.
Quivers.
Let's go start with remote. Let's literally strip everything back and say you are solely managing a remote workforce. Because I think the priorities then, you look at it from a different perspective. And so for me, in some ways, I wonder about the model of managing a mixture. Because particularly managing a mixture of agents, if, you know, some are permanently work from home, some are permanently work from contact center, and some are doing a little bit of both. I mean, a good team leader will know their agents really well, you know, and know what's best for them. But as we also know, there's a high turnover of agents. So if you're trying to essentially manage three different, not employee types, but three different working setups for those three, I just think it creates a lot more work for the team leader and a lot of extra steps. Yeah. Whereas if you're solely focused on remote or solely focused on at least having the same thing, okay, guys, we're all in on Tuesday and Wednesday and the other 3 days we're all from home. I just think there needs to be some consistency there. Otherwise, it just team leaders are spending a lot of their time chopping and changing communication style.
You've got a point there that there is some waste that exists there when you're having to make that transition in context between work from home and in office, which for a team leader whose time is pretty precious it's not what they need. Let's wrap things up because we are out of time, but that was an awesome chat, mate. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it.
Good to hear. So how do people find you? How do they find Smart? Give us all of your...
Yeah, if you want to find me personally, jump on LinkedIn, James Whitcomb, spelled WITCOMBE. If you want to check out Smart, that's Smart with two A's, so smart.com.au. If you want to check out our best practice report, it's Smart, again, with two A's, .com.au/best practice.
Too easy. Well, and to find us, all the usual stuff, go to our, you can find me on LinkedIn as well. And if you're not already following us on the Agile Contact Center page on LinkedIn, do that as well. Obviously, follow our pod, give us a rating and a review. And if anyone's wondering where Arnie is, because he's been absent the last couple of
months. Where is Arnie?
Arnie, he's still around. He's not, he hasn't just ditched me on the pod. He's had a baby. He's had a little boy.
Fantastic.
So he'll be back at some stage and he can give us a full rundown on how that's been for him. But yeah, he's now a dad.
Yeah. That can be the next podcast.
Yeah.
Life of a new dad with Arnie.
Arnie's probably got a YouTube channel set up for that already. So I'm sure he's there. All right. Thank you so much, James. As always, mate, appreciate all your support. And until next time.
We'll chat soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.